Have you ever had that feeling? Yeah, that there's something speaking, but it's not you. Okay, there, it's working. Whoever said that. So it's good to be here. And so many familiar faces, and to see how the church is growing, it's wonderful. Who of you have heard me speak before? Okay, maybe let's do it this way. Who hasn't heard me speak before? Okay. Feel free to leave if you're not enjoying it. It's okay, I won't be offended. Okay, so today we're going to talk about David and his family tree, 2 Samuel 13. I'm not going to go into the details because there are some little ears over here. So go and read the story at home, but it's not a family devotional story either. Okay, it's not one that you want to talk about in the family. Okay, children, let's just sit down and just read 2 Samuel chapter 13 and see what we can learn from that. So I'm going to skip over some details, but you'll be able to read it. And if there are your little children here taking notes, make sure they don't know exactly where it's found. So Absalom, David's son, had a beautiful sister whose name was Tamar, and after a time, Amnon. Absalom and Tamar were children of David and Micah. Amnon, David's firstborn, was the child of that name, and he loved her. Amnon's love for his half-sister was polluted by a passion of lust. So you can see where this is going. Something happens in that chapter. And because of that, Absalom does this. Look what Absalom does. Then Tamar put ashes on her head and tore a robe of many colors that was on her and laid her hand on her head and wept and went away crying bitterly. And Absalom, her brother, said to her, "Has Amnon, your brother, been with you? But now hold your peace, my sister. He is your brother. Do not take this thing to heart." Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house. So just remember that. She remained desolate. But when King David heard of all these things, he became angry. And Absalom spoke to his brother Amnon, neither good nor bad. For Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar. And so it goes. The foundation of most of our behavior is laid early in our lives. Think about that. All behavior is learned behavior. Everything that you do is learned from somewhere. Everything that your children do is learned from someone. And often, guess who's the guilty party? You. They learn a lot of their behavior from you. So, for instance, take this. If you talk to your wife with disrespect, or if you as a wife talk to your husband with disrespect, and say you're all very critical and you're always snapping and you're harsh, and then when your child does that, what do? You discipline them. You say, "Don't talk to your dad like that. It's rude to talk to your mom like that." But where do you think they're learning it from? They're following your example. Where did you learn about marriage? Anybody? Your parents, that's right, whether good or bad. And guess what your children are learning about marriage? Your daughters will learn how to be treated by men, by the way you treat your wife. Your sons will learn how to treat women by the way you treat their mother. And girls will learn how to be treated by men by the way you treat their mother, and they'll learn how to respond to men by the way mom responds to dad. So just look around. I mean, one time my oldest daughter, she's 15 now, but when she was about 4 years old, she'd always stand like this. And she'd observe stuff going on around her. And both Mandy and I stood there and looked at and we'd look at each other and say, "Look at Lauren, oh, she's so cute. I wonder where she's always standing like that." And I'm not joking, this is the absolute truth. Both Mandy and I one day were standing like this, watching Lauren stand like this. And both of us said, okay. Now, a lot of the stuff that you learn, it comes subconsciously. It doesn't always come directly. Now, not everything that your child learns. Obviously, sometimes your child will come home and say a bad word. They don't hear it in the house. They hear it from school. We all know that there's stuff. But they're learning something. They're learning something from society. They're learning something from TV. They're learning something from school. If we are not the primary feeders into them and speaking life into them and calling their destiny out of them, someone else is going to do that. And I don't want anybody speaking into my child's life that I don't agree with. So I make sure that I'm the primary person that speaks into their life. And they see me speak it into my wife's life on a daily basis. I'm saying positive things to Mandy, to my girls. I'm speaking positive things and trying as best as I can to react in a way that is godly, because I want them to learn positive behaviors. So David and Bathsheba, in 2 Samuel 11:13, Absalom, Tamar, and Amnon were teenagers when the Bathsheba incident. You remember the Bathsheba incident? We won't go into details there, but remember what happened there. They were teenagers. So where did they learn that? Where do you think Absalom, Tamar, Amnon learned that behavior from? David didn't teach it to him intentionally, but unintentionally, your kids catch stuff. You catch stuff unintentionally. We catch attitudes. So behavior that we saw as David's model was manipulative, treacherous, covering up, secretive, and deceitful. So look what David did to the Tamar incident. He became very angry, but nothing happened. Later on in that verse, it says, for 2 years, Absalom waited for an opportunity to kill his brother. For 2 years, David did absolutely nothing about what happened there. He was angry, but he did nothing. And so they learned to be manipulative, treacherous, covering up, secretive, deceitful, and that sin is okay. And think about it, folks. When you are driving down the road with your cell phone to your ear, when you are driving without your seatbelt on, when you are speeding and your children are in the car, and they see all those behaviors, you might not think that there's anything wrong with it. Oh, everybody does it. No one, I haven't been caught yet. I only speed on the odd occasion. I only talk on my cell phone when it's really, really necessary. But what are you teaching your children? That sin is okay. It's okay to obey some laws, the ones that you choose. Then when your child starts to behave in a way that is unlawful later on when they become teenagers, how can you correct them when you have not set a foundation at a very young age? So what these teenagers learned, how to cover up. How to avoid issues. Dysfunctional families. Now, let me just say this. All families are dysfunctional. Every single one of the families that are represented here, and the family that you come from, and the family that you're in and that you're married into, and the children that you have come from a dysfunctional family. Every single family is dysfunctional. It's just the depth of dysfunctionality that varies. Some families are more dysfunctional than others. And we always say, oh, they're more dysfunctional than mine. Eh? Have you ever been to your, like when you were growing up or whatever, or even now, you go to a friend's house, like as a teenager, you go to your mate's house, or your mate comes to your house, and they see what's going on there, and then they pull you aside and say, Steve, is it always like this at your house? You know, of course, it's normal. No, it's not normal, bro. People don't speak to each other like that. You know? Do you guys never eat? I mean, we never, ever ate as a family at a table when I was growing up. Never. My mate's family used to eat at a table every night. And they'd sit around, joke and pray and share scriptures and have a fantastic time. And I used to love to go to his house because I'd sit around a table and have a free meal too, because his mom cooked nice food. So it was really nice. So even when I had my motorbike accident and I was in crutches, I was in plaster for a year, and I had a plaster cast up to here, and I was on my crutches, I'd walk to his house, which was, yeah, I don't know how far it was, but it was far on crutches, and I'd walk up about 50 stairs, just so I could get a lack of meal. The reason was I'd loved sitting at the table. The dysfunctionality that you don't see in your family, other people see, and they say, listen, hey, that. And so sometimes we only realize that there's something wrong in our lives or in our family lives when someone points it out and says, geez, do you always talk to your wife like that? Or does your wife always talk to you like that in front of other people? Do you think that's cool, you know? And then we don't want people to speak into our lives. And that's why I'm so busy, unfortunately. Because the majority of people that I see 24 people a week. Out of those 24 people, 20 of those are Christian marriages. Now think about it. How can that be if we're supposed to be Christ followers and our marriages are in such a crisis because the devil is attacking us and all that kind of stuff? But we should be setting an example. We shouldn't be operating out of dysfunctionality. And here's the key. Hurt people, heal people. And we should be moving from hurt to healed. And if there are issues in your life, you need to sort them out. If there's stuff that's from the past that you've never resolved, every unresolved issue from your past will always affect your present. It doesn't matter how far back it went. If something happened to you when you were 8 years old and you never ever dealt with it, however you dealt with it then when you were 8 years old, where you shut off emotion, you cut yourself off. When you experience the same thing when you're 30, you're going to do the same thing. Because it's learned behavior. You learned it when you were 8, and you carry that stuff all the way through till you're 30. And then you wonder why your marriage or your relationships or whatever, you cannot hold a relationship. You cannot hold a conversation. There's always something wrong because it's an unresolved issue from the past, unmet needs, unhealed hurts that you've never dealt with. And so what happens is we respond out of hurt, not out of healing. So when you get two hurt people together, what happens? There's chaos. And how is your children supposed to survive? Because then what you're doing there is you're just breeding the same thing. You're just duplicating two of the same that are going to carry that same dysfunctionality, hurt and pain into their own marriages. So they learned how to cover up, how to avoid, how to ignore the hurt that grows out of our actions. Have you ever been told, don't cry, don't be such a baby, don't be a sissy, toughen up? Especially boys. You know, as a boy, when I was growing up, those of you in my age group, 30 and thereabouts. Mark's laughing. Sorry, I meant 50 or thereabouts. Often, you know, they're saying cowboys don't cry. And that's what you grow up on. The boys aren't supposed to cry. The only emotion that boys are allowed to express is anger. Because what do you get taught? If that gives you a problem, you sort him out. So, bless him with a fivefold ministry, eh? So, we ignore the hurts from action. So, we're not allowed to get angry. So, often we say to our children, don't get angry. Now, let me just say this, that there's nothing wrong with getting angry. There's nothing wrong with being sad. There's nothing wrong with being a little bit depressed. There's nothing wrong with being frustrated or irritable. But how you respond, how you take that into your family or into your relationship or into your outer world, that's the problem. It's how I use my anger and what happens with that anger. Because what does anger do? Anger is a defense mechanism. Because what happens when you are faced with an angry person? What do, generally speaking? Unless you're a fighter, you'll back away. Because that's what anger does. Anger closes us off and pushes people away. It's a defense mechanism. And so we use that to protect ourselves from harm. So there's hurt and pain. Anger is always a result. I can guarantee you this now. Anger is always a result of an unresolved issue from your past. If you're struggling with anger, there are unresolved issues in your past that you need to deal with. There's hurt and pain that has happened in your life that you've chosen to ignore. You've been taught to ignore it. And now it's starting to, what did I say? The chickens have come over to roost. And the eggs aren't that nice. Then sin is okay. So they learned that. Let me just say this quickly, is that we should never be excusing sin in our own lives and in other people's lives. Not that we judge or criticize. But sin is never okay. And we should never be teaching or modeling a lifestyle that tells our children that sin is okay. The stage was set for a thoroughly dysfunctional family history to unfold. Part of the problem was they never fully dealt with the incest between Amnon and Tamar. And one of the things that keeps the dysfunctionality going in a family is denial that there is a problem. Anytime that you deny that there's a problem, it's going to come. It's impossible for you to not deal with an issue and expect it to just go away if you just ignore it and pretend it doesn't happen. The more you deny it, and the more you try and suppress it, the harsher it's going to manifest later on in your life at some stage. And it manifests in all kinds of ways. It doesn't only just manifest in anger, it can also manifest in being and just closing yourself down. So that you don't respond openly to people because you're afraid of being rejected and hurt. And so you just shut down. You don't develop close relationships or intimate relationships with people because you're afraid of being rejected and hurt. And so you just cover that up. You deny that there's a problem. No, there's no problem. I've so many times have I had people that they always point at the other person. No, they're the problem, not me. So many times I've had husbands, especially husbands, will come and sit on my couch and say, my wife says, I'm the problem, I need help. And she's not the, no, she says, there's nothing wrong with her. There's the first, don't point at your wife, bro. I'm joking, man. You've got a fright, yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean that, okay? but it's true, eh? It's so easy to point at other people. And so they're the problems, not me. But in reality, all of us have got problems. The minute you deny it, it's going to manifest somewhere. So denial is a refusal to acknowledge abusive behavior, also known as the elephant in the room. Nothing characterizes dysfunctional families more than denial. Denial forces family members to keep believing the myths and the vital lies in spite of the facts, or to keep expecting that the same behavior will have a different result. Have you ever heard that? What is the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing in the same way, expecting a different result. If you do what you've always done, you're going to get what you've always got. If you don't like what you're getting, you need to change what you're doing. It's this law of sowing and reaping. What you sow, you're going to reap. If you sow bad stuff and bad attitudes and dysfunctionality and pain and hurt, you're going to reap that one day. Remember, it's a law. You cannot change that law. It's written in the universe. Seed time and harvest. You plant a seed, there's a time for it to germinate, and there's a harvest. You plant a tomato seed over here, 3 weeks or 6 weeks later, however long it takes to grow a tomato bush, it's going to spring up. It doesn't matter how you think, no, I don't want a tomato bush, I prefer pumpkins. Okay, well, just lay your hands on it and pray. Maybe it'll become a pumpkin. It's not going to happen. Anybody ever heard of a story like that? A tomato changing a pumpkin? Never. You can confess the word to it. You can pray. You can lay anointed with oil. It's never going to change into a pumpkin. Tomato is going to be a tomato. You can't expect, folks, you can't expect to sow discord and disharmony and expect your children to come up and, oh, they're such lovely Christians and serving the Lord. It's never going to happen. We have to intentionally do things over here. Speak into our children's lives. Pray for them. If need be, fast and pray for them. Speak positive stuff into them. Teach them. Show them how much you pray. Show them that you read the Bible. Show them and speak about Jesus all the time and live it out in your daily life. Don't speak one thing over here at church and all that kind of stuff and raise your hands. And then when you get home, it's all grumpy. And I'm speaking from experience. I used to be like that. I'd be at church, hello everybody. By the time I'm home, I was in a bad, foul mood. I had a bad attitude, really bad attitude. It came from hurt that I never resolved. I had to take myself through a prayer and healing process that I designed myself. I took myself through that and I cleared that stuff away. No longer is it an issue for me. God can set you free from anything. So for example, Dad's not an alcoholic because he never drinks in the morning in spite of the fact that he's drunk every night. Now, people will say that. I'm not an alcoholic. I only drink one bottle of wine a night, that's all. And here's the key. If you want help, you have to first admit you've got a problem. If you're not willing to admit that you've got a problem with anything, you're never going to get help. Because you've got to say, I've got a problem and I need help. That's the problem with narcissistic people. Narcissistic people will never change because they will never admit that they've got a problem. It's always someone else. There's always someone else to blame, never me. If you've got a problem, find someone that you can speak to about it. Deal with it. Confess it. Go for prayer. Do whatever it takes to get out of that. Don't allow yourself to live in that bondage any longer. Denial prevents problems from getting solved. When denial is present, it leads to unresolved issues. Absalom waited. Unresolved issues breed vengeance and justification for our wrongdoing. 2 Samuel 13:27 to 28. That's when he actually takes the guy. If you want to, I can give you a copy of the presentation. You don't have to. Yeah. Shame, she's using up all her data. Okay, so in 2 Samuel 13, 27-28, it talks about him waiting, and he asked David if Amnon could come with him to go and do something. They were taking some animals somewhere, and he asked permission if he could take Amnon with, and David said yes. Because why? He had been waiting for 2 years. He held that vengeance and that bitterness and that anger. Let me tell you, there are four doors that you can keep open. Anger, rage, violence. Resentment and bitterness is one door. If you've got any of that, unforgiveness or bitterness and stuff that you have, it's an open door for the enemy to come and harass you. Sexual sin, open door for the enemy to come and harass you. Pornography or anything like that. Occult, any kind of witchcraft or whatever, palm reading, anything that you've done. Even if it's generational, even if it's down the family line, someone along your family fooled around with devil stuff. You need to clear that out. And the last one is anger. Did I say anger? Anger. Bitterness, unforgiveness. It'll come to me. Sorry. There are four doors. I just can't remember the fourth one. Okay. So if any of those doors are open, you need to close them. Deal with that stuff. Don't keep it open. What we learned about Absalom in Sunday school, if you ever went to Sunday school and you got taught about David, you would have heard about Absalom. He was the bad guy. He needed help. He was the scapegoat. The only one in the family who had problems. Is that true? No, it's not true. Who was the problem? David. He was the head of the home. Fathers, dads, men, it starts with us. God puts a greater responsibility on us than he does on the wife. We are going to be held accountable for how our house runs. God is going to come down on us much harsher than he is on the ladies. Because we have been given, God spoke to Adam first. Eve wasn't around when God gave the command that you will not eat from those trees. Eve wasn't there. It was Adam's role to give it, to tell her and to guard her and protect her and keep her safe and make sure she didn't fall into sin. It's our roles as men, fathers, and husbands to make sure that our family does not fall into sin. We've got to make sure that we're not in that arena ourselves. We've got to protect them and keep them safe. Your son's dad are going to learn from you, and it's in that book. Your sons will learn from you that they have to, they've got to hear from you that they've got what it takes. Look at a lot of men who are workaholics. What are they trying to prove? They're trying to prove to everybody that they've got what it takes because it was never affirmed by their father. Now, I don't want to blame everything on our parents. And it's not, we're not picking on our parents. And we're not trying to say, okay, we need to go on a witch hunt to get our parents. We've got to take responsibility for our own behavior and how we've dealt with the stuff that's come down. But as dads, we've got to speak into our sons' lives and we've got to make sure that they know that they've got what it takes. And girls need to hear from their dad that they're beautiful, I'll keep you safe and I'll protect you. If the girls don't feel like that, they will find someone who will do that for them. And guess what, fathers? Your daughters will probably find someone who won't do that. It's inevitably what happens. They find a dysfunctional person. What needs to happen is for healing to take place. So here we go. We're on the home stretch. What does it take for a family to recover? We need to understand that each member in the family has hurts. Every single one of us has got unmet needs, unhealed hurts, and unresolved issues. And my job as a father is to make sure that I'm not the cause of those unmet needs, unhealed hurts, and unresolved issues in my family. And same with my wife. I'm hoping that she'll do the same. Because we pray into that stuff. I must never be the one that's causing those hurts, those unmet needs, and unhealed hurts, and unresolved issues in my daughter's life. So I never speak words that are breaking them down and cursing them and treating them with disrespect. There's no such thing as a scapegoat. And I'm going to quickly show you something. You might not be able to see it properly, but it's fine. I just want to just quickly show you. Okay. There are certain areas, there's what they call, they categorize people in families, the roles in the families, hero, scapegoat, mascot, lost child. So if you look at the hero, the hero, scapegoat, lost child, the hero is visible. His inner feelings are inadequate. He's what he is to the family, self-worth, high achiever, grades, friends, workaholic. Often you'll find the hero is the firstborn child. Firstborn child is the achiever works really hard, goes for the gold, just, you know, the scapegoat or the lost child can often be the middle child. You heard of middle child syndrome? Don't speak that over your child. Don't tell people that, oh, she's a middle child. Is she? She's got insecurities, just typical middle child. You're speaking that death. Remember what the Bible says, life and death is in the power of the tongue. Don't speak that over your kids. Speak life into them. I'm so glad she's a middle child because she's got such great characteristics. Find the positive characteristics. I was a middle child. I grew up with huge insecurities and rejection and fear and pain. My brother was the firstborn, and he was a high achiever. He did everything right. And I remember, still remember one time that everything that my brother did was right. Now, I wrote it, I think it was in that book. It was one of the other books that I wrote. I wrote about that. And when my brother read the book, he phoned me and said to me, was it really like that? I said, yes. He said, because I felt that you were the favorite. I said, you're right, try and pull another one. If you were right, I'd beat you up. Because he used to beat me up. Now I'm a bit stronger than him, so I can sort him out now. I can run faster. So it's also about the perception. So he was from my perspective, it seemed like he was treated better. When I was in the army, I bought a record. You know, remember the long praying records that we used to have? Huh? Kids don't know what we're talking about, but those long praying records. He sold it. When I came out of the army for a weekend pass, I said, where's my record? No, he sold it for the money. I said, you sold my record? Yeah, no, for sure. So I went to my mom. My mom says, you weren't here anyway, so whatever. Okay. Bought myself a nice jacket because it was winter. Had to leave it behind because I was going back to the army. Came back about 6 months later. He sold my jacket. Where's my jacket? No, I sold it for the money. I said, Mom, it's fine, man. It's not winter now. You're in the army. What do you need a jacket for? Okay, fine. I'm out of the army now. It's about 5 years later. My boot comes home for the weekend. He lives with his in Bedford View because I stayed in Joburg. He comes and visits. He leaves his lacquer because my boot was a real smart, like, always dressing fancy. His lacquer jeans, his shoes, and lacquer belt. He leaves it at my house. So he phones. In those days, we still had the dial phone, no cell phones in. Hello? Yes. Are my jeans there? I said, yeah, they're here. And my shoes? Yep. My belt? Yep. Can you keep? No, I'm going to sell them. No, you can't do that. I said, too late, pal. They're on my bed. I'm going to sell them for all the jackets and the things that you sold me. Put the phone down. I went, that stuff was gone. My mother had heard me on the phone, taken the stuff and hid it away. So tell me who's the favorite, eh? So I had to deal with that. I'm just telling the story. There's no resentment here, I promise, eh? Okay, so sometimes what you've got to look at is you've got to look at those kind of behaviors. Is that sometimes you might feel like that. Look at the scapegoat, hostility, visible difference, defiance, anger, inner feelings, hurt and guilt to the family. Takes focus off the alcoholic or whatever it is because they're the scapegoat. There's always someone who will be punished for something. So all of the punishment goes on to that child or all the excessive violence or anger and whatever is focused on that child. Now, you can look at that. That's exactly like my family. My brother, myself, and my sister. Lost child, withdrawn and loner. Loneliness, she feels unimportant. When I was in the army, my sister was probably about 18 or so. You know that she wouldn't talk to me on the phone when I phoned from the army. When my friends came to visit, she wouldn't even open the door for them. She was too embarrassed. She left school in standard 7 because she couldn't handle it. She hated it. She's a totally different person now because stuff has happened in her life to change that. But that's growing up, that's exactly what happens. And so what you've got to look at is that you might not be able to identify with all that. And I'm not saying that you must look for if I'm a lost child or a hero and stuff. I'm trying to show you that what we've got to be careful of is that we're not treating our children like that. And if you feel like you are any one of those and there's stuff in your life that has happened, that has caused you to feel whatever, rejected or hurt or a different person, you the scapegoat, maybe you the whatever. You need to deal with that stuff. Don't deny it any longer and don't let it go on because God does not want you to stay there. God does not want you to live out of that pain and that hurt. Deal with that stuff and get rid of it. It's easy for the family to designate one person to be the scapegoat and Absalom was the obvious black sheep. I was often labeled as the black sheep of the family. because I was just a little bit different. I was a little bit rebellious compared to my brother. I failed twice at school. So the best 3 years of my life was grade 8. But in reality, he wasn't the only one who needed help. He just acted out in the obvious ways. And sometimes your children will be acting out certain behaviors and you think that there's a problem there with that child, but then you've got to actually look at yourself and say, okay, is there something that we might be doing or that I'm doing that might be actually causing that behavior? Because look at it like this. Sometimes your child will manifest some kind of behavior because they need attention and they need love and affection from you. They need affirmation. They're not getting it from you. What do? You discipline that bad behavior. Now, let me say this. If the behavior is a... if it's a behavioral issue, so the way that they're behaving is because they're being naughty or defiant, and you discipline that in a healthy way, you correct that behavior. But if they are acting out in a way because they need connection from you, so in other words, it's an emotional issue, it's not a behavioral issue. If you discipline an emotional issue, you're going to push them away. Because emotional issues are not created for discipline. They manifest themselves for connection. They are trying to tell you that they are not feeling connected to the family. So sometimes their behavior will be an indication that there's something lacking. And so you need to be able to observe and say, okay, what is going on here? Is this behavior defiant or a behavioral issue that I need to discipline? Or is it a corrective thing that is emotional that I need to change? And maybe I'm working too much. I'm never at home. And my children are starting to feel that. Maybe I'm always grumpy and shouting and screaming, and so my children are starting to feel that. They're acting out in certain ways and behaving in a way that is inappropriate, and I don't know how to deal with it. I need to say, okay, is there something that I'm doing or I'm not doing that I should be doing? If there's an unmet need, you need to meet it. If there's an unhealed hurt, you need to heal it. If there's an unresolved issue, you need to resolve it. But if you think about it, he must have been something broken in David himself that prevented him from taking appropriate steps to deal with Amnon as well as the damage to Tamar. What did he do? He just denied it. Pretend it didn't happen. The damage to Tamar was great as she lived the rest of her life in desolation. In all families, each member has hurts and wounds, and each member of the family needs help. In the family of the alcoholic, we need to see that all in the family need help, and the rate of relapse is less if all the family members are involved in the recovery. That goes with any kind of dysfunctional behavior. That the whole family needs to be involved. We can't just focus on the one thing. All of us need to be a part of that. And then the second one, as parents, we do the best we know how to do. Although David was furious because of what was done to Tamar, the scriptures don't indicate that he did anything about it. For Tamar to gain her self-respect, she needed her father to take her violation and hurt seriously and take clear and appropriate action, which he never did. Instead, he's... inaction caused Tamar to suffer further and for his son to take matter into his own hands. So because he lacked the leadership of the father in the home, it just perpetuated the cycle. That's what denial does. And just think about it like this, folks. What you deny in your generation, the next generation, it'll affect them twice as hard. What you deny here, it's going to manifest itself. It might not even manifest in the next generation. It could skip a generation and go to the third generation. And when it hits that generation, it's even harder. So you might have an alcohol problem here. You deny it. Next generation or the generation after that, they don't just have an alcohol problem. They have a drug problem too. Or they're even a worse alcoholic than you were. Maybe you're just a binge addict, not a full-blown alcoholic. But when your child grows up, they become an alcoholic, or even worse, they marry an alcoholic. Even though David was a godly man, he didn't know how to face pain in his family and how to deal with it appropriately. And that's what I found. It's the saddest thing for me, and I saw it in my own life, is that as a Christian, you don't know how to face pain and hurt, emotional pain and hurt. Who do you talk to about it? Who do you talk about the violation that you suffered as a child, the rejection that you felt? The beatings that you experienced or whatever it was in your family. Who do you talk to about that? And often as Christians, there's a lot of, especially men, are carrying such pain and such baggage from their past that they don't know how to deal with it because they haven't got a male person that they can trust, that they can speak to, because we're too proud as men. We don't want to show that we're vulnerable and that we got weaknesses. He did the best he could with what he knew. Have wise friends, mentors, and counselors who can help us to repent the destructive patterns, or not to repeat the destructive patterns. David repeated what he observed in his own family. Old saying that if one person heals, it heals many generations. So you can stop that cycle. Whatever has been in your family up until this point, you can stop it with you and say, no more. I can break that thing forever. It's not going to go down to the next generation. Stops here with me. I've got the power and authority to do that because Jesus said you have. He's given you the power and authority to tread on serpents and take control of the enemy. The enemy does not have any access into our lives. He's not allowed to have. We're children of the King. He only has access into our lives if we keep those doors open. Imagine the power you have to turn the tide of painful patterns and leave a legacy of health and wholeness for your children and generations to come. Then thirdly, time does not heal wounds when it comes to family issues. Families dispute over inheritance, or families are separated through bitterness, effects of cousins and so on. I don't know how many times I've had people sit in my counseling room where the parents have died and there's an inheritance and stuff, and it just splits the family because they fight over it. My mom, when she died, she never had anything. But there was a policy that was due. And I said to my wife, I'm going to go and find out what this policy is. And it probably isn't going to be much. But I want you to know that if it is a lot of money, if it starts to become a problem, I'm not interested. My brother can have it. I was just thinking. I'm not saying that my brother would have done that. But I just thought, you know what, I don't need that money. I'm quite happy without it. So if money came in, I'm not going to. If he wants it and he's going to fight over it and he's going to become all bitter and angry, take the money, man. Okay, how much it is? Could be a million. It doesn't matter. Just take it. Because you know what? You fight for that stuff and you become bitter and angry and you become ungodly about it and you carry that bitterness and anger with you the rest of your life and you come to church and you try and worship God, and I tell you now, the Lord will start to work in you and you're going to say, no, I'm not going to go. I'm not going to. It's his fault. He should have done it. He shouldn't have treated me like that. And you hold on to that pain and that hurt and that unforgiveness, and God just withholds his blessing in your life. Not that he wants to do that, but when we choose to walk in sin and unforgiveness, he closes the door. And you don't want to live in that area. You don't have to live in that area. Don't allow anything to become a problem. Absalom tried to get his attention through various ways after separation from his father, even though they hugged. In 2 Samuel 14:33, you see they try and reconcile. But even though that happened, it never changed. Absalom and David had a broken relationship. Eventually, Absalom died, never knowing how his father felt about him. David grieved 7 years after his estrangement from Absalom. Can you see the pain? It goes on. You and I, as believers, we don't have to live with regrets. We can let that stuff get healed and sorted out and release it once and for all. God can take that pain that you've been suffering for, I don't care for how long, how many years you've had that. God can take that pain away instantaneously. Now people say, got to do counseling for years. I've been in counseling for years. And that doesn't matter. One encounter with Jesus can set you free. He can break that stuff over your life. You don't have to live in that realm anymore. The pain of separation must have been excruciating, even for David. A deep hurt that only intensified with time. Time heals all wounds was not true in this case and is really true in life. Don't say that to people. Don't worry. Time will heal it. You'll get over it in time. Even if that was true for you, it doesn't mean it's going to be true for someone else. Time doesn't always heal wounds. Sometimes those wounds, we carry that stuff. I'll tell you what does heal wounds. Jesus. Time doesn't. Jesus does. Okay. Change that happens inside must translate outwardly into relational change. David was able to work out his issues with God, but his children really saw the sensitive side. It is confusing for our children when we have a spiritual side that is vibrant and active, but yet does not translate to gentleness, kindness, and forgiveness in our family life. Inconsistency in your family, inconsistency in your attitudes and the way you treat people, and inconsistency in your discipline will breed insecurity and rejection in your kids. So when you when you discipline them, that discipline is going to be seen as rejection, not pulling towards them. It's pushing away. So you don't want don't have a spiritual life and another life. Make sure that you are consistent all the way through. The most effective way for us to share our faith is not to preach, but to be Christ-like. You know for yourself. I mean, you've probably said it about other people. That man doesn't practice what he preaches. He says one thing. So do as I say, don't do as I do. We can't live like that, folks. We've got to make sure that we are living the way that we say. If I tell my kids that they must have their quiet time, I must make sure that I'm having my quiet time. I can't be a hypocrite and tell them to read their Bible and say, tell them how important it must read their Bible, how important it is to go to church on Sundays, but yet I'm like slack and lackadaisical about it. Ask yourself this question, and you don't do this to brag or to be proud or to show off to anybody, but ask yourself this question. When was the last time your children saw you read the Bible or pray on your own, not as a family? But when did they catch you actually, "Oh, sorry, Dad, I didn't know you were praying"? We've got to set the example. Because there's no ways that our children should say, "Well, why should I pray? You never do. Why should I go to church? You're always complaining about church. You're always moaning. You always got something critical to say about the pastor. Dad, why are you so friendly to Mark in the mornings and then on Sunday over lunch you criticize him?" My children have never said that. Okay, I'm just using an example. Just in case someone's like, "Oh, yeah." Yeah. Okay, we're nearly there. Okay, gee, where'd that come from? Okay. Sorry, what was that one? When our talk doesn't line up to our actions, a stage is set for relation and spiritual dysfunction. There we go. David seems to have a different relation with his son Solomon. Proverbs 4 verse 3, "For I was my father's son, tender and only beloved in the sight of my mother. He also taught me and said to me, 'Let your heart hold fast my words, keep my communication commandments and live.'" It appears that David did a better job of sharing his faith with Solomon in a way that Solomon could hear and understand. It's never too late to be the parent or spouse you have always wanted to be. Oh, you can always start and learn from your mistakes. Start over and learn from your mistakes. Okay, there are 6 steps. How much time we got? Am I finished? 5 past. Okay, 5 minutes. Sorry, 9 minutes past. 1 minute. Okay, 1 minute. Here we go. 6 steps to help an individual take action, take a step, get into a support group, read books, see a counselor. If you respond passively in the face of problems, what do you think the result will be further on down the road? Remember, unresolved issues always going to manifest themselves. So these slides are all funny. Instant society healing takes time. Sometimes as Christians, we shame ourselves for taking too long in our grieving process or healing. Oh, sorry. I don't know what's going on here. It's hard to know what normal is when you come from a dysfunctional family. Be prepared for it to take time. Because sometimes healing does take time. I know that I said I'm not contradicting myself. I know that I said that Jesus can heal you instantaneously like that. But sometimes there is a process to get to that point. There's a process of healing and setting free and getting rid of bondages and breaking strongholds in your life and all those kind of things. Closing those 4 doors, going through your relationship with your father and your mother and your siblings and doing all of that stuff and going through a whole process of forgiveness and dealing with family generational things that have come down, dealing with ungodly beliefs and then any demonic issues that are there, whatever. So you deal with those things and then in that process, the Lord starts to heal and set people free very quickly. Listen to talks, DVDs, series, books and get educated. Oh, sorry, it's all wrong here today. Absorb new learning and information. I'm sorry about that. You need to reprogram your mind. Doing what it takes means abandoning the excuses and getting rid of denial. Do whatever it takes. Get an accountability partner. Passivity and inactivity will only bring you more of the same. Dump the shame. Family shame, cultural shame, and religious shame are emotionally deadly. It might take some learning to get rid of your shame. Shame, fear, and control. 3 strongholds in your life. Shame, fear, and control work together all the time. You're ashamed of what happened. You're afraid people are going to find out, so you control your relationships. You control who you talk to. You control who has access to your life. You control how much of yourself you give. Rejection is always the inability to give or to receive love. So you're unable to give of yourself completely to the other person, and you're unable to receive completely what they have to give to you. Did you get that? Do you want me to say it again? Very quick. I've only got 1 minute. This longer, let's just make sure that all of those are there. There we go. Develop an authentic spirituality. No real change happens without God's help. The longer you keep something secret or deny it, the stronger it becomes and the stronger its hold is over you. That is why confessing our sin is important in 1 John 1:9 and Romans 10:9. The power in the sin is in the secrecy of it. The longer you keep it secret, the more power it's going to have and dominate your life. So anything that's a secret, anything that's in the darkness, bring it into the light. The minute you shine the light on it, loses its power. Okay. We'll end there. Ooh. My daughters are going to... they hate it when I put pictures of them up. Just to close off. It doesn't matter where you see yourself or where your family is. Understand that God can heal and do whatever needs to be done to get you the place He wants you to be. He's got a special plan and purpose for your life, for your spouse's life, for your children's lives. And you hold the key to that. Do whatever it takes to get that freedom and that deliverance, whatever it is. I'm going to give Mark a copy of this. If you want it, you're welcome to take it. There is other stuff on there that I didn't cover tonight, but there's other stuff there. He's got my details. If you need to contact me or phone me, or even if you just want to chat, you don't necessarily have to make an appointment. So if you want to phone me and talk to me, you're welcome to do that. I'm quite open to talking to people on the phone. No problem. But please feel free to do that. Let me pray for you as we close. Father, thank you for this fellowship. Thank you for this church. Thank you for the people here. And Lord, you know each and every one that is sitting here tonight. And I pray that you will speak into their hearts and their lives. That in the next couple of weeks, you will lead them to the people that will be able to help them with whatever issues and healing and hurt and pain that they're struggling with, Lord. Thank you that you are the divine healer. That you are great and a wonderful God. We worship you, Lord. And we thank you that you can set us free. We don't have to carry the pain and the hurt. We don't have to be bound by sin and brokenness. We can live in the joy and the abundant life that you've spoken of. So thank you, Lord, for your blessing tonight. I pray that you'll bless each and every person represented here. May your face shine upon them and give them your peace. May you lead them and guide them in the weeks that lie ahead. And may you manifest your love around them as a wall of fire everywhere they go. We ask this in the wonderful name of Jesus. Amen.
Guys, I'm sure that...